Hello there, listeners and viewers. This is Ron Stefanski with yet another episode of Disrupt Ed. And you know the drill here. We are here to uncover the secrets, the answers, the problems, and the opportunities inherent in this ginormously 5G wired workforce augmented technology interconnected, globally interdependent, AI accelerated, pandemic interrupted world of work and learning. There has been no business sector that's been more disruptive over a longer period of time than the world, the exciting world, I should say, of retailing. You know, we had in the United States, we started with companies like Sears Roebuck with their kit homes, where you could literally buy a home and they'd send you the materials and the instructions and you could construct your own home. One of the interlopers, one of the competitors that came on the scene against Sears Roebuck was the place where my father spent his career, Montgomery Ward, and they developed the innovation of a catalog business. And then those organizations over time have been disrupted by others entering the field. And now we're in this interesting stage. And I'm going to welcome here on the show today a very exciting individual that I want to introduce you to, who's going to talk about AI in the world of retail, and that's none other than Daniel Wagner. Daniel, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thanks, Ron. Thanks for having me, and thanks to all of your listeners, too.
Well, it's great to have you here. So, Daniel, talk to us. You've been a veteran of the retail world. You've spent your career here. You've watched all this disruption going on. And why don't you share with our audience a little bit about your origin story, how you came into retail, and how you kind of see the lay of the land over the last several years?
Well, thank you. So I started my first company back in 1984, and it was the first commercial online information platform where we digitized, you know, newspapers, trade journals, periodicals, and made them available for people to interrogate online. And of course, in the early 80s or the mid 80s, there was no data centers to use like Amazon Web Services. There was no e-commerce technologies. There was no search technologies. So we had to build all that ourselves. And so over the next 16 years, that business became the world leader in online information. And my company became quite sophisticated in search and commerce. The next company I set up back in the late 90s was a company called Vendor, which was a enterprise commerce platform, became European market leader for enterprise e-commerce. We ran the e-commerce sites in the US of Neiman Marcus, Land's End, TJX companies, Under Armour, J.Crew, L.L. Bean, those kind of mid-market customers. And I sold that business to Oracle in 2014. So it's now their main commerce platform. So I've come from a sort of journey of information search and commerce. And what we're doing at Resolve, of course, is trying to take the next step in Gen AI, which, I think is the most exciting tech development that I've seen in my career. And I've been through, you know, some interesting developments over my 40 years of being in e-commerce and search. And I think that what's happening with Gen AI is the most exciting development in technology that I've seen in my lifetime. And we have created within Resolve the opportunity to deploy that technology in retail in the most, I think, incredible way that really steps up the engagement with digital platforms from where it is today, you know, changes it quite dramatically, I think.
You know, I'm interested to explore a little bit more your comment about how it's expanding the customer engagement and how it's really enhancing the retail experience. Because over the years and most recently, there's been a lot of grim news about retailers, about big retailing. 2 to 3 years ago, people were kind of saying it's going to be Amazon and very little else. And yet, retailers persist and the business continues to grow. And I think that's in part because of our American addiction to shopping and the addiction to having that experience, that retail experience. I'm curious how AI enhances it in specific ways, you know, how it makes it better for the customer.
So look, you know, it's very simple because there's a very big difference today, Ron, between when you go into a physical store and you speak to a good salesman, right? And sometimes those good salespeople are not the people you interface with, unfortunately, but let's assume that you go into a store and you have a good salesperson there. That person is going to be knowledgeable about the products. They're going to give you good advice and they're going to help you make the right decision. When you go online to do the same interaction, maybe even with the same store on their online version of that store, the interaction is very kind of functional. It's like black dress, you know, food blender, you know, you and then you filter. But you don't get advice, right? I mean, you don't say, I'm kind of interested in this food blender versus this food blender. Which one is better for this kind of food or this kind of utility? And I'm going to use it a lot. I'm going to use it 5 times a day, or I'm going to use it once every week. Or, you know, you can't have that kind of conversation with an e-commerce platform today. But you can have that conversation with the store, you know, the salesperson in the store, because they know about it. So what Gen AI has done and what we're doing at Resolve is that we have created the digital version of the best salesman on the planet, because the salesperson that, you know, our trained generative AI engine has not only absorbed all of the product information, but also all of the reviews, all of the user manuals, all of what's out there on the internet about those products, the unboxing that people do on YouTube, you know, by transcripting those and ingesting those, which are what consumers do today. Because what you do today is you go to a digital platform, an e-commerce platform, you look at the product, then you go, you know what, I think I'm going to go to the internet, see what people have said when they unbox it, see how they compare this food blender to that food blender when they, you know, on a YouTube video, I'll watch that for 30 minutes, then I'll go here, I'll go there. You go through a whole experience, because you have to do that in order to get the information that otherwise you'd be told by an expert. So what we've done is we've really leveled up that commerce experience, because now I can go to an e-commerce platform and say, I'm looking for a food blender. I'm not sure whether I want to have one, this one called whatever it is, or this one called whatever it is. And my use pattern is that I'm going to be using it 5 times a day at my gym, you know, making smoothies for people. So it's going to get a lot of utilization. What do you think I should get? Now, you can't ask that question of a digital platform until this new Gen AI capabilities came about. So that's what we're doing. And I think that's very exciting. But there's another element to it, which is that I can also speak to that commerce platform and ask those questions in my native tongue. Because a lot of people, particularly here in America, are a melting pot of different cultures and languages. And people would like to be able to ask that question in Korean or in Arabic or in Spanish, or in Chinese. And, you know, Resolve's Gen AI capability would immediately understand that consumer and be able to answer them in that language, even if the platform, the site, the retailer is an English language retailer with only English language named products and descriptions. So that's what Gen AI does. It changes the interaction to a much richer experience, and it changes the ability to interact into the local language of the user.
You know, as I'm listening to, I think there's a one-word description that Londoners would use in this circumstance. Just brilliant. It's just brilliant.
It is, and brilliant.
You know, I want to go back to something. You know, you sold one of your companies to Thomson Reuters. And so I was a veteran of the information tech, and I worked for them at one point. And I think it's really interesting that you are uniquely qualified in that respect to think about the retail experience, because in those early days, you were all about cataloging and creating information hierarchies and helping people to sort through reams of information. And I think that's what's sometimes perplexing, you know, and I'm going to use a recent example as a consumer. I went to buy a charge cord, and so I went to Amazon. And you can go to Amazon, and there are thousands of different charge cords. But right now, at least in my experience, I'm reading through reviews, and they all sound alike. And so there's a point at which a consumer just wants to have someone that they think, you know, you get it, or you trust, you know, I trust you, just to tell me what to do. And I think that is the missing ingredient in a lot of online retail experiences. And then to your other point about the, you know, finding that best salesman or salesperson in the physical place. Well, that's not always possible, because over the years, we've become, you know, retailers have become very efficient, and that's a very, very limited commodity out there, is to have a very experienced person. Retail sees a lot of turnover, sees a lot of people coming through. And so you don't get the opportunity to get that person that's at the top of their game. You typically get someone who's scrambling between one and another customer and just trying to ring you up. So I think those are both some fascinating things, but I'd like you to dig a little bit more into, you know, how you think that information experience in your early entrepreneurial career helped inform what Resolve is becoming?
Oh, it's absolutely. It's been critical. I mean, in the early part of my career, in the early, the mid 80s, when we were getting content in from the newspapers, we had to provide some sort of structure to that content because the search technology in those days was very, very limited. If you made a mistake in the spelling, you wouldn't get the result. If you added a space in between the sentence, then you wouldn't get a result. So as a result, we needed to create a structure around the content that we were building so that the user could enter something like, product launch, and they would pick up articles that was maybe Colgate-Palmolive announces new toothpaste. It doesn't say the word product launch, but the tag product launch would have pulled that article up. So we created, as you said, taxonomies, and we started to create a structure around that taxonomy. I had librarians, I recruited librarians in the 80s to help me build taxonomies. And then later on, we started to automate that process. We tried to create special search technologies that could automate the process of adding taxonomies to data. Now, as we come into the Gen AI world, where I remember, I think people don't always understand that Gen AI is actually mathematical algorithms guessing the next word and then guessing the next word and then guessing the next word such that they create a sentence. You're not really talking to a cognitive individual that happens to be a computer. You're talking to an algorithm that's guessing. That's why these big companies, that's why all of us are training our models on lots of data so that it has more and more reference points to guess the next word in answer to a question. So what we've done with Resolve is knowing from all of that, we also realize that product catalogs can be very deceiving. Let's say I'm a fragrance company and I've got 200 aftershaves in my product catalog. One of my aftershaves is going to be called Beast or Savage. And it's going to have descriptions like blackberries and woody notes and barbecue flavors. Okay. Now a computer doesn't understand Beast and barbecues is a perfume, it's going to think it's a beast in the forest. So we have approached this application of AI to product catalogs to allow the product catalog to really shine when consumers are interrogating those retail situations, right? And as you say, when you go into physical retail stores today, often you are very dismayed by the fact that the salesperson has very limited knowledge and actually picks up their mobile phone and, searches in front of you for an answer to a question. It can be that bad. Yeah.
Right. That's what makes it so maddening, actually, is you go there for help and they're actually basically telling you, figure it out on your own, or I'll do just what you're going to do. You're not adding anything. If they're simply searching, I can do that at home and I didn't need to come here. As I think about your example of the fragrance words and descriptions that are used, it's almost like you're teaching the algorithm to become more colloquial or to understand more colloquialisms. So that there's nuance to each word that goes in there. So nutty means one thing in the wine business, another thing in the fragrance business.
Yeah, what we spent the last 6 or 7 years doing with our language model, our foundation language model, is training it to understand that a product catalog is a product catalog, first of all. And secondly, based upon who the merchant is or the retailers and the area that they operate in, to create a very rich taxonomy around the product set so that when somebody interrogates that, it's a much richer filed product catalog than the ones that you would interrogate today when you do any search, when you say you're searching for an airline ticket or you're booking a theater ticket or you're buying a food blender or you're going for, whatever it is that you're searching for. The structure of that data is actually quite limited. It hasn't changed much in 30 years of e-commerce, 30 or more years. And so what we're doing is we're really leveling that bit up, right? Massively improving how rich the product catalog is. And so when interrogation happens, not only is the product catalog enhanced, but also the AI has ingested the user manuals of every product. It's ingested all this other material so that you can ask really clever questions. I mean, if I went to the Home Depot equivalent, right, I would be able to ask a question, I need to put some shelving up. This is the framework of the shelving that I want to put up. These are how many shelves I want to do. You know, what do I need? And the AI will tell me, you need this varnish, you need this paint, you need this, you know, these nails, you need this and the other. It will give me everything. And here's some instructions on how to do it. And don't, you know, hurt yourself in the process by putting some matting down, or because it knows all of that like an expert would. An expert person who had built shelves before would know. That's really the key.
Right. That's what's really cool. Now, I'm making the assumption that your tool is only used in the online retail world. Do you see a world in which these algorithms can be used to enhance the physical retail experience, where they're somehow used as a, you know, as an info kiosk or something like that?
Absolutely. There's a number of scenarios where it can be used in the physical retail environment. One would be the drive-in use case, right? So for example, today, when you drive into your Starbucks or your Dunkin' Donuts or whatever it is, you are met, first of all, with a microphone speaker to put your order in before you drive around to collect it. Now, what happens is there's a lot of, you know, miscommunication there, because the person in the car driving up may not have English as their primary language. Right. The person in the drive-in restaurant, you know, where you're driving around to collect your order, also doesn't have English potentially as their primary language. So there can be miscommunication in the order. The order's placed, and then by the time I come around, that's actually not the right order. And so you end up holding everybody up, and there's a backup to the process. And that actually happens quite a lot in drive-ins and drive-through restaurants, you know, fast food restaurants. So we're working with a partner who builds those tablets that are used to present the menus and so on, to put brain in there, you know, Resolve's brain technology, where I can then speak in Chinese or in Korean or in Spanish or whatever to the recipient, which is the microphone, which is not somebody in the kitchen, but it's basically brain. Brain takes the order, pushes the order through in English to the drive-through counter, and then I drive around and they get the right order. So that's one example of a real world. Other examples are, you know, if I can walk into a department store and, you know, when I'd like to speak to a specialist about the cosmetics counter about my skin or my hair or whatever it is, you know, I can actually speak to Brain, which is the best expert on all the products available and how my skin conditions could be best managed by the products there, rather than speaking to the assistant who may or may not know the answers, right? I mean, you just got, it's a luck of the draw, really, isn't it? So brands who have, you know, brilliant product catalogs and capabilities can't always communicate that to the salespeople in the store. So they can put a tablet in there and have a conversational engagement with the customer by having the people who are in the laboratory who created those cosmetics, basically having their data ingested by Brain, and Brain being able to answer almost anything. So I think we can level up the in-store experience in this way as well. And then you've got the languages too, you know, the all the different.
Yeah, I think the language thing is really huge, because what I notice is a couple of things. You know, language is causing us in this world, in the United States, to be a polarizing influence, because we're now becoming, a greater number of people are becoming anti-immigrant, which is insane in a world, in a country that is a country of immigrants. But I think language sometimes contributes to that, because people get frustrated. They have this expectation of a quick answer. And then someone who may not speak the language fluently or has a hard time understanding you slows that process up, and it causes that.
Correct.
Frustration. So what you're really doing is you're creating a leveler there where someone's going to say, wow, you really understand me. And so you can be patient with me. And to me, that's the civility that makes the retail experience, the physical retail experience, so delightful, is talking to a human being that you actually understand and can engage with. And so this seems like almost a support system to better civil engagement between people in the commerce trades.
Absolutely. But I think more importantly, there's a large amount of attrition in the digital checkout experience. Right. There's about 70% attrition, which means that people arrive at a site, and maybe it's because they didn't find the product. Maybe it is because they found the product, but they didn't know all the answers to the question, that they dropped back out of that flow. And most e-commerce directors and e-commerce managers are looking to improve that conversion, you know, to reduce that attrition from 70% to 69%, 68%. By making those improvements, they have a massive improvement in their revenue. And what we have is that what we have is the within Resolve is the ability to give all the answers to the consumer so that the consumer is able to make that informed decision without having to go elsewhere, to go and find another, you know, I can ask all the questions and get all the right answers. And that's what sales is all about. If you said to me, you know, and you asked me about a car and I couldn't give you the answers to the, about the car, or I couldn't tell you about, you know, whether the seats are leather or they're, you know, faux leather, or whether it has this consumption or that consumption, you're left a little bit unsure about whether to make the purchase decision. But if you're given all the information, then it's just down to, am I going to buy it or not? And I think that that's a really important development in e-commerce and the digital platforms, because it changes everything. And I'll give you one other example, right? If I wanted to buy tickets to the theater on Broadway, today on a digital platform, I have to go through filtering and then find what's available. And then if they've got the seats on the day that I want to go, and then I want to see whether or not the reviews on that theater or that show are any good. And, you know, there's a lot of filtering and effort. But if I spoke to a concierge at a hotel or somebody like that, or a special a service provider, I would say, look, I would like to go to a show on Broadway. I want it to be a popular show. I'd like it to be a musical or a comedy. I'd like to sit in the center of stalls on this day. What have you got? And that experience that I just described of talking to an intelligent individual who knows the answers is what I can now do by speaking to my mobile phone. And I think that, and immediately get the answer. These are the shows that you would like, that have seats in the center stores, that are musicals and they're top high rated. You know, that looks good. I'll buy that. And immediately the purchase activity is contracted and improved.
Right. The word I keep using on Disrupt Ed is gobsmacking. This technology is gobsmacking. I mean, when you look at it, it is powerfully disrupting the way we think of the retail experience. And this is absolutely fascinating to me. Daniel, I mentioned off camera, I was so excited to listen to you talk about this because of your background and information and how it's being, used to drive this brain experience or this AI retail experience through Resolve. And I just find this so fascinating. You know, the thing that I, as I was researching more about you and quite honestly, cyber stalking you and looking into your background and everything, I noticed that in one of your releases or one of your conversations, you mentioned the power to reduce counterfeit, interactions and things. And I think this is an important one to touch base on, because for many people, you know, as we get more electronic in our transactions, more people are worried about privacy. They're worried about people creating identity fraud with their information and then doing something about it. And that's where you get all these errant charges on your, you know, credit card from retailers that you never, you know, never worked with. So maybe you can help tell us how your technology is actually improving that end of the business, because that's a very daunting one.
Yeah, so we, as part of our activities in AI, we developed watermark technology, which allows invisible watermarks to be embedded in image and audio. So I'll give you the audio example. I could be sitting watching television and an ad comes on for a BMW car or a car, and my phone hears an audio watermark. We don't hear it. It's invisible to the human ear and to animals' ears too, just to say. And then my phone will wake up in front of me and say, do you want a test drive of the new BMW X5 or whatever it is that's being advertised? So it's a true online to offline kind of interaction. The TV commercial that I'm watching triggers an engagement on my mobile phone, which is typically sitting in front of me or next to me, and offers me the opportunity to engage. Now, on the image side, we can embed an image invisible watermark that can only be seen by the camera of a mobile phone. Can't be seen by the eye. Now, when you have expensive cosmetics or expensive products with product labels on it, often these are copied in around the world by counterfeiters and passed off as being the real thing, like aftershaves, you know, for $100, you know, which otherwise are just made very cheaply and aren't the real thing. Now, the problem is that the you know, putting a QR code on something on there doesn't solve the problem, because the counterfeiters just put up a QR code and bounce it to some site that looks very similar. So you don't overcome it. But a hidden watermark can only be read by a camera that can decode that hidden watermark. So a counterfeiter can't copy it. So we have the ability to provide a hidden watermark into product labels that then, with the right application on the phone, can be read by either the consumer or the salespeople, you know, or the retailer. So at least the retailer knows they're buying the real thing, and then the consumer can check as well. Now, it's not something that we're focusing on a great deal right now. It's proprietary tech that we own and have patented. Our focus right now is that I think the much bigger opportunity of what we've been discussing, which is conversational commerce. I think every store on the planet should be enabling conversational commerce for their customers. And I think that that's the area that we have a very significant lead in, and we will look to exploit dramatically. This other technology is available. It's our technology. And I think that we will look to, you know, roll that out to those interested parties in due course. But our focus at the moment is all about conversational commerce and improving that checkout experience in a physical store, physical and digital store.
Right. But I also think, booyah, this whole idea of the counterfeiting and using the invisible watermark, that's just genius, because we're all afraid that AI is going to do really reckless things. And in your world, you've kind of created an inoculation against that already, which is very, very dynamic and very exciting. You know, as I listen to you with your lovely British London accent, I'm reminded of what has been my ultimate retail experience, and that's always been Harrods in London. You know, when you go to the Harrods store, they are not understaffed. They are staffed with extremely carefully chosen merchants who have been there for years and know so much. And I'm reminded of going into the tea section, where a gentleman spent, you know, 5 or 10 minutes with me asking me how I drank my tea, whether I drank it with lemon or cream, did I like it strong, did I like it mild, did I like it, you know, enhanced with, you know, other fragrances or other things. And I just remember that experience and buying like a ton of coffee from him, first of all, or a ton of tea from him, but secondly, just enjoying the experience. You know, and I think when I think of an enjoyable retail experience, it starts for me there, where, as you describe it, you have someone that cares about your encounter and is very knowledgeable and informative and is really there to help and to enhance it. And if they can do it on more direct terms with you in the language of your preference, and they can do it with more information, and they can also provide that discernment, you know, the discernment you're describing, so that when you're faced with 5 or 6 alternatives and they all sound suspiciously similar in a catalog, you have someone who actually takes it next level, it seems to me, and helps you discern, okay, well, this one, in my experience, a lot of customers don't like this. You know, I would go with this. And I think that's really the innovation you're talking about here. That's extremely exciting.
I think that you hit the nail on the head when you mentioned Harrods, because Harrods is a wonderful department store, and as you say, it's full of very knowledgeable salespeople. I mean, you know how they've kept these people there for you know many years, who are real experts in their field. So whether you go to the cheese counter or the tea counter or the furniture department or wherever it is that you go, the people that you engage with there are really of the very highest quality of salespeople. They are extremely knowledgeable. However, how many times have you been to the Harrods website? And the reason that you probably haven't, right, I'm guessing you haven't probably been very often, because why would you, right? What does the Harrods website offer you that is a destination? Now, if you knew that when you went to the Harrods website, you had that same level of fantastic knowledge and depth and understanding that each of the department heads and the salespeople in those departments had contributed to the brain absorption of content, right? Then that same level of intellect and understanding about everything in the store is going to be reflected by the site, and that I think is, you know, the nirvana, right? The best possible representation of Harrods in a digital environment is to have a website that is as rich and as knowledgeable as the, right. the experience we get in store. And that's what Resolve's brain can do for them today.
Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense. So to my listening and viewing audience out there, you've been listening to Daniel Wagner, the charming, animated, brilliant retailer who has launched Resolve and has just turned it into a public company of some note and is really, really, as you can hear from this episode, disrupting retailing as we know it and improving it as we go along. So what a fascinating story. What a fascinating individual you are. Daniel, and I'm so pleased that you were able to make time available for us on Disrupt Edge. So any closing comments for our listening and viewing audience, Daniel?
Well, only to say that, as you mentioned, we're listing on NASDAQ under the ticker symbol RZLV. And we're one of the only, I think, AI platforms that will be publicly traded in America, which owns its own language model. Ours is focused specifically on commerce and retail in the ways we described to make that experience much better. I think that the focus that we have is very compelling. It's an area we know very well from all of our years. So that's news. I'd like to thank you and all of those watching and listening to the podcast for taking the time to hear the story. We're excited about what we have to offer the world and how we will change the world in some respects in how the consumers will be able to interact in these digital platforms. It's extremely exciting for me to be part of this, and I hope we make a very significant impact over the next few years.
Well, again, brilliant, just brilliant. And to our listeners and viewers, hey, guys, get engaged with us, get disrupted with us, share your comments, share your feedback, share the podcast, and look for us again in our next episode of Disrupt Ed. Until then, take care, my friends.
Thanks again, Ron.